Get Sleepy is a production of Slumber Studios and is made possible thanks to the generous support of our sponsors and premium members. If you'd like to listen ad-free and access weekly bonus episodes, extra-long stories, and our entire back catalogue, you can try out Premium free for 7 days by following the link in the episode notes. Now, a quick word from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. During tax season, your personal info travels to a lot of places, between payroll, your tax consultant, and the IRS. If your W-2 gets exposed, that's just the ticket for identity thieves. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it guaranteed or your money back. Don't let identity thieves take you for a ride. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary, not available in all states or situations.
Welcome to Get Sleepy, where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. As always, I'm your host, Thomas. Thank you for tuning in. Tonight, we continue our progress through meeting each of the 12 Olympian gods. While there were nearly innumerable gods in ancient Greek mythology, the Olympians were the most powerful and important. We've met Zeus, king of the gods, but tonight we are graced by the presence of his queen and consort, Hera. Hera is the goddess of marriage, women, family, dignity, poise, and tradition. She is the only being who has the courage and command to be the divine partner of Zeus. It would not do for us to meet her in a state of agitation or high energy. She asks that we instill in ourselves the self-possession and poise that she herself stands for. A big thanks to Frankie for her wonderful writing, which I have the pleasure of reading tonight. If you're enjoying the show, we'd love to have your support on our members' feed, Get Sleepy Premium. Not only will you be supporting the show and making it possible for us to keep bringing you all the dreamy content you need to rest well, but you'll also receive even more content to enjoy, with full access to over 850 full-length stories and meditations, as well as our weekly bonus episodes, which come out every Thursday night. And better still, everything is completely ad-free. So why not join us tomorrow for our premium exclusive about a lucky penny found in the woods that takes our protagonist on a magical adventure? It's an extra long story which will be read by Elizabeth. To learn more about Get Sleepy Premium, just go to getsleepy.com/support or follow the link in the show notes. You get the first 7 days free of charge, so there's no immediate commitment. Thank you so much for your support, my friends. Now then, before we begin tonight's story, relax your body into the safety and comfort of your bed. Enjoy finding the most luxurious position and the nicest spot to sink into, appreciating the support of your mattress and pillow. Let your muscles release the tension they've been holding all day. And allow yourself to let go completely. Take deep, full breaths. Fill your lungs slowly. Then release them in the same manner. Create a new rhythm in your body using your breath. Allow this pattern of inhale and exhale to consume the totality of your attention. Your mind may still be busy from the stresses of the day. Be gentle with yourself as you draw your attention back to your breath and your body. You are only human, and meditation is a skill that must be built over time. And it takes lots of practice. Enjoy a few more deep breaths. Our tale this evening takes place high on Mount Olympus, the home of the gods. Clouds wrap around the twin peaks of the mountain, hiding the home of the gods from view from mortal eyes. But we have been invited for the event of the millennium, and so the clouds part for us. This is where our story begins. The summit of Mount Olympus looks down over the still very young world. Zeus has wrested control of the cosmos from his father's generation and has but one important duty left. The goddess Hera looks down on the world, contemplating the day ahead of her. It is the most important day of her young life. She has fought hard during the War of the Titans, and now she gets her reward. She feels the breath of Zephyrus, the god of the west wind, against her cheek. She knew this day would come, but didn't expect to be nervous. Below her stretches out the entirety of Greece. It is untouched by humans, as they have not yet been created. The glittering blue of the Mediterranean calls out to Hera from the distance. From this vantage point, Hera can also see above the cloud line. Her view is split in two. Below, the browns, greens, and blues of the world. Above, she sees the white landscape of clouds that dominate the sky. Heaven and earth are held in her eyes. A small voice from behind her calls out for her attention, and Hera turns away from the view. Hebe, her youngest child, toddles up to Hera. Hera picks up the tiny goddess and places a kiss on her forehead. A prophecy and peek into the future flashes through Hera's mind like one of Zeus's thunderbolts. Hebe will be the goddess of youth. Hera smiles to herself, thinking about the vast range of talents, skills, and responsibilities her children hold. All of her children were born during the course of the war, so it is unsurprising that her oldest children, Ares and Hephaestus, should be attached to the powers of war. Ares is the god of battles, warriors, heroes, and war. Hephaestus is the god of fire, volcanoes, the forge, and crafting, though his skills are mainly put to crafting weapons and armor to an incredible standard and beauty. Even her daughter Eris is the goddess of discord, and what is war at its heart but extreme discord? Hera wonders, though, how sweet Hebe and her sister Aletheia, goddess of childbirth, came to be so different from their siblings. The goddess puts the matter from her mind as she sets Hebe down and lets the child toddle off towards Aletheia, who sits not far away. Hera counts her blessings to have 5 strong and powerful divine children. She casts her eyes over them now, all arrayed around the palace of the gods, waiting for the event to begin with the other guests. Aletheia babysits Hebe. Eris stands in a dark corner with Hecate and the other underworld gods. Ares boastfully and loudly tells a story amongst a group of warriors. Hephaestus stands to one side, in deep conversation with his assistants, the Hecatoncheires, no doubt talking about something to do with crafting. Hera smiles to herself and feels her nerves calm at the sight of her children. A voice that booms like thunder pulls her attention away, and she immediately makes herself invisible. Zeus comes around the corner, the grin on his face melting away like snow in a heavy rain when he cannot see her. She stifles a giggle and reminds him that he is not permitted to see her before the wedding. Zeus's great brow crinkles in mock sadness. He begs her to make herself visible, grasping around for her. Hera nimbly avoids his outstretched hands and sends him on his way, telling him she will see him at the altar. He gives up and obeys her orders, as always. Hera is not a goddess to be disobeyed. The sudden eruption of music lets her know that the time has come. She makes herself visible once again and steps out into the crowd of gods, demigods, titans, nymphs, and immortal beings. They all turn to watch her as she picks her way through the gathering. The faces of friends, family, and nearly all of creation smile back at her. Hebe waves at Hera from her sister's arms and loudly announces that that is her mother. Hera laughs with everyone else. The last few people in the crowd make way for her, and she finds herself in front of an altar covered in flowers, beside which stands Zeus. Hera feels the soft grass beneath her feet as she walks towards Zeus. She has been planning this day for so long that she can hardly believe it is happening. She has known for a long time, due to her prophetic powers, that it is her destiny, her moros, to become the Queen of Heaven. Nevertheless, the responsibility and duty of her future have been making her nervous. Yet, at this moment, as she walks towards the god that will be her husband, she doesn't feel any anticipation. She is ready for the job ahead of her. She is about to participate in the first wedding ever, but it will not be the last time that she achieves a first. She is Hera, and as such, is the mother guardian of the entire cosmos. The wedding is happening now because Zeus and Hera promised one another that they would have a ceremony and a celebration once the war was over. Finally, the day has come. This is not just a union of two gods, but also a ritual to welcome peace and establish the Olympians as the rulers of all. It is both a marriage ceremony and a coronation for Hera, and most definitely the happiest moment of her life so far. The ceremony is simple. Zeus and Hera pledge themselves to one another and to the just ruling of the cosmos. They name their children as signs of their strong partnership and declare all of creation their offspring and under their protection. They seal their vows with a tender kiss, and the gathered crowd cheers boisterously. And so, it is done. The celebration commences immediately, and the guests begin to cheerfully set up for a very special competition. In preparation for the wedding, Zeus and Hera put it all through the world that they would hold a contest for the best dish at the feast. The winning food or drink would be the chosen dish of the gods, and the maker would be granted a single boon from the royal couple. Hera thought it appropriate that they start their marriage with a joint decision, something to show the world that she and Zeus are now a unified pair. All through the main ballroom of the heavenly palace, creatures and beings assemble themselves and their offerings. Animals, insects, nymphs, dryads, oceanids, satyrs, and everything in between look around eagerly, awaiting the start of the judging. The collection of dishes and generally edible things reflects the great variety of creatures that made them. Some things would be digestible or delectable for a spider, while others would be appetizing to a bear instead. Hera and Zeus, like all immortals, can eat anything they want. Zeus and Hera make their way down the line of beings. They greet each one with the regality and poise that is afforded to them as the king and queen of heaven. Hera takes great pleasure in looking each creature in the eye and connecting with them before trying their dish. She admires the large eyes of a doe, shakes the soft hand of a nereid, and pats the fluffy fur of a wolf. Finally, Hera and her new husband come to a tiny, fuzzy bee. The black and yellow creature alights softly on Hera's finger and peers at her with large eyes. The bee folds her delicate gossamer wings and proffers a tiny cup with two drops of a golden substance inside. Hera takes a sip before passing it to Zeus. The drop touches her tongue and blossoms in her mouth like nothing she has ever tasted before. It is both sweet and floral, yet it doesn't cloy at her taste buds with sweetness or clog up her nose with perfume. It's somewhere between a paste and a liquid. Hera imagines it mixed with hot water and mint leaves for a warming drink, or smothered on freshly baked bread. Just as the flavor is slowly fading away, she looks at her husband and knows immediately that they are of the same mind. This marvelous food is their choice. Hera asks the bee what it is called, and the bee replies that it is honey. Hera inquires more about how honey is made. The bee takes the Queen of Heaven through her process. She bobs through the air, going from flower to flower and collecting pollen. The sticky pollen attaches to her fuzzy body as she visits every bloom she can find. The bee tells Hera that she makes honey from the pollen of many flowers, but that the flavor and aroma can be changed by adding more or less of one plant or another. Hera listens, enraptured by the ingenuity of this little creature. She can tell that Zeus is mostly interested in finding more honey than listening to how it's made. But Hera ignores him. She congratulates the bee on her creation and announces to the gathered guests and contestants that this honey is the winner. With a wave of her hand, Hera puts a small cup of honey in the claw, paw, hand, or mandible of every creature in attendance. They all taste together, with nearly everyone agreeing that the honey is the clear winner. Zeus announces that honey will henceforth be ambrosia, the food of the gods. He imbues it with the power to turn mortals immortal, if offered from the hand of a god. As the cheering and celebration die down, Hera turns back to the bee. The little creature is quivering with suppressed joy and excitement. Hera tells her that her time has come to ask for a boon or favor from the queen and king. The bee pauses for a moment, considering her answer. Then she launches into a desperate plea for a way to defend herself. The bee outlines how long it takes to make even a small amount of honey, and how any other creature can easily take her honey from her because she is so small. Hera, with the sharpened intuition of a wife, can tell that the request has angered Zeus. He considers such a large request to be an insult. He also takes issue with the bee's criticism of her own form, as it implies that the immortals who created her were flawed in their design. And Zeus, above all else, does not suffer even the smallest insubordinate thought from anyone. Hera speaks before the thunderheads can fully form above Zeus. She looks down at the quaking little creature and tells her that she will make the little bee a queen. Hera relays that the bee will be the leader of a vast colony. She will have as many workers as she likes to help her collect the ingredients and make her honey. With this gift, the bee will no longer have to bear the strain of working so hard for so little outcome. Together, the bee and her hive will be able to make more than enough honey for themselves. The bee's tiny body vibrates in the air with joy and excitement. As a fellow queen, this bee must have protection, Hera decides. She tells the bee that all her kind will be armed with a sting to ward off those that might try to steal their honey. Hera warns that this sting is only to be used in dire situations, for it can only be used once. The bee, impressed and honored by Hera's ruling, nods her tiny head to show understanding. Hera smiles down at the honeybee and tells her to be on her way. The bee happily buzzes away as Hera turns to Zeus. The angry thunderclouds above his head have completely disappeared as he looks down at his queen. Her calm demeanor and just decisions have impressed him. Through her bearing, Hera once again reminds Zeus that he has aligned himself with not just a powerful goddess, but one intended to rule. Hera smiles at her husband as if reading his mind. She casts her mind back to when she had decided to take Zeus seriously as a consort. When they were young, Zeus had pursued her endlessly, but she thought him nothing more than a boisterous and boastful young immortal. He sent her flowers and trinkets. He sang to her and composed poetry. But Hera wasn't won over by him. When he asked why she didn't return his love, she told him that she was not interested in a partner who could not show her his vulnerable side. Even with all his wooing, Zeus was always full of self-confidence and showmanship. So, Zeus went away to think about her words. Not long after, Hera was sitting beside a great blue lake. The perfect sky was reflected in the surface of the water, and the sun sent light glimmering across it with the wind. Hera lay in the grass on the bank, allowing her mind to rest in that beautiful place between sleeping and waking. The warmth of the sun felt like a blanket of heat across her skin. She breathed deeply, just about to finally allow herself to slip fully into sleep. Suddenly, a sound pulled her back from the world of dreams. She lifted herself up on her elbows and looked around. In a bush not far away, there was a flash of feathers amongst the leaves. Hera stood up and walked over to the foliage to inspect further. She reached in and pulled out a cuckoo bird. The poor animal was a wreck. Its feathers were in disarray, and it looked as though it had an injured wing. Taking pity on the bird, Hera brought it back with her to a cave nearby. She nursed the animal for days until it was back to health. Hera became very fond of the little bird, which was so sweet and tender that she couldn't bear to be away from it for long. After a week, the cuckoo was fully recovered. Hera, filled with the bittersweet sensation of imminent parting, carried the cuckoo to the entrance of the cave. She raised her hand and let it fly away. The bird flew into the sky, but then came back down to earth, suddenly turning into the form of a young man. Hera watched with astonished eyes as the sweet cuckoo transformed into Zeus himself. The young god told Hera that though he was slated to become the next leader, and felt he often had to look strong in front of others, he wanted to show her that she was the person he could be vulnerable with. That was why he had spent the past week in her care. Hera saw him differently from that day on. No longer was he just a charismatic leader, but also a god with a deep tenderness that he reserved only for her. The cuckoo has been sacred to her ever since. Coming back to the present, Hera finds that her eyes are filled with tears of joy. She embraces her husband. A soft clearing of the throat brings Hera's attention away from Zeus and the beginnings of their relationship. Hera turns around to see her grandmother standing before her, the goddess Gaia. On the ancient goddess's face sits a loving smile as she looks upon the newlyweds. Gaia was one of the first primordial beings to come into creation. She is the ancestor of every living thing on the planet in many ways. As old as she is now, she rarely walks about in a human-like form, usually preferring to rest deep in the earth. Yet today she has made an exception for her favorite granddaughter. Gaia holds out her cupped hands and gestures for Hera to do the same. Gaia reveals a dozen little golden seeds, which she tips gently into her granddaughter's hand. Hera looks at the seeds in her palm, which appear to be tiny drops of pure golden sunlight. Gaia takes one seed and kneels. She makes a small hole in the ground, places the seed inside, and covers it again. Gaia places a hand over where the seed is buried, and within seconds, a small green shoot appears. Moments later, the shoot has become a sapling, and it isn't long before the sapling is a young tree bearing golden blossoms. Even before Hera's eyes, the blossoms trail gently from the branches, leaving young fruit behind. Finally, the fruit swells to ripeness, and before the entire wedding party stands a golden apple tree. Hera's breath catches in her throat. The tree and apples are the most beautiful things she has ever seen. Hera throws her arms around Gaia, unable to fully express her gratitude through her tears of joy. Gaia returns her embrace. Hera breaks away from her grandmother and looks at the 12 seeds in her hand. She knows immediately what to do with them. She darts away through the party guests, looking for a specific trio. After a few moments of searching, she finds them. The three beautiful Hesperides chat together in a corner. They are the goddesses of the West and the setting sun. As beautiful as the golden hour, the three sisters seem to glow with the vibrant colors of sunset. They are Hera's favorite cousins and confidants. The triplet sisters break into large grins as they see Hera approach them. Barely stopping for breath, Hera tells them about Gaia's gift and asks if she may plant the seeds in their garden. The Hesperides are the keepers of the most lovely garden in the world at their palace. It is located far to the west, though few know exactly where. Helion, the sun god and driver of the sun chariot, is one of the only gods to know, because he brings the sun there every evening. The Hesperides are honored by Hera's request and grant it gladly. They make plans for Hera to come to their garden after the wedding and plant her orchard of golden apples. The Hesperides promise to look after the orchard forevermore. The goddesses are smiling and laughing with one another when the sound of music washes over the entire wedding. Hera feels a warm hand on her shoulder She turns to find Zeus requesting a dance with his new bride. Hera accepts with delight. They glide together, hand in hand, to the middle of the crowd. Everyone watches with toothy smiles and glistening eyes as Hera and Zeus begin to dance. Hera looks up into the face of the thunder god and counts herself lucky. The couple moves together to the music without thinking. They are simply lost in one another's eyes. The sun's rays shine down upon Mount Olympus, illuminating the gathering and showering everyone in a wave of warmth. It is impossible to say how long the immortal couple dance, because the wedding itself lasts a total of 300 years. Yet, for Hera, this moment in the arms of her husband lasts a lifetime.